completely 100% obsessed with Star Wars. Some parents do it right, right? Here's the theme for today. Who is this guy? Because you see in the Gospels, so many questions were asked about Jesus. Who is this guy? What is he doing? What is going on with him? The Gospels are filled with questions asked directly to Jesus and about Jesus. Who is this guy? It begins at the very beginning of his ministry, even before his ministry begins, with Jesus' temptation, which is the gospel for next week, also part of our play coming up on the 19th of March. When the devil comes, Satan comes to Jesus, not necessarily with a question, but with the challenge. If you are the Son of God, and the devil tries to get Jesus to do things Satan's way, to prove to him who he actually is. Jesus was known to eat with the wrong kind of people. He went out of his way to eat with those who were considered sinners, the undesirable, tax collectors, prostitutes, and the religious people, the righteous people would say, who is this man who eats with sinners and tax collectors? Why would he do that? Do you know that at least some of Jesus' own family thought he was crazy? Do you know that? Mark tells us that story. That some of his own family members came to drag him home to lock him up because they were wondering, who is this brother of ours who is saying such crazy things about himself? When Jesus calms the storm as he and his disciples sail across the Sea of Galilee, the disciples, when the miracle has occurred and the waves have stopped and the wind has ceased, they whisper to one another, who is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? They don't actually dare to ask Jesus himself, who are you? But they say this to one another. In several of the Gospels, Jesus goes back home to his hometown of Nazareth. And there he stands up in the synagogue and he preaches the word of God. And the people in his own hometown say, where did this man get all of this? Where did he come up with all this wisdom? In fact, in Luke's Gospel, when Jesus talks about who he is and what God is doing for him, his own hometown folks, they try to lynch him because they think this man is a blasphemer. Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist. Luke tells us that John the Baptist and Jesus were related, but when John was in prison, John had questions about Jesus, and he actually sends some of his disciples, some of his followers to Jesus to ask, are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another? Who are you, Jesus? Even John was not exactly sure. And after John had been executed by King Herod wonders who this new guy is out there. Who is this new guy who seems to be picking up where John the Baptist left off? There's a story where some men who have a friend who is paralyzed, they actually hack a hole in the roof and lure the man to Jesus. Jesus heals the man, and then he forgives his sins, and once more the religious leaders demand to know, who is this who even forgives sins? Because when Jesus dares to forgive the man's sins, he claims the power of God. Jesus is known for casting out demons. And the first time he does this in a synagogue at the very beginning of his ministry, the crowd say, what is this, a new teaching? With authority he commands the evil spirits, and they listen to him. Who is this guy that he has the power to cast out demons? All these questions were raised about Jesus. And they were raised about Jesus because he was someone so ordinary. The people in his hometown say, we know this guy. We know his mom. We know his brothers. We know his sisters. This local boy, who does he think he is saying and doing all that he is doing? Who is this guy? Because you see, I don't think there has ever been anyone like Jesus. Someone who on the surface was so ordinary, but someone who was so extraordinary. There's a story in the Gospels. It's the great climactic scene in the Gospels, where Jesus and his disciples are walking down the road near the city of Caesarea Philippi, north of the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus asks his disciples, he raises the question, and he says, who do people say the Son of Man is? The Son of Man was a way in which Jesus referred to himself many times. And the disciples, they're happy to answer. They say after Jesus brings up the subject, well, some people think the Son of Man is John the Baptist come to life. Some think he's the prophet Elijah who's returned from heaven. Some think he's Jeremiah. Some think he's one of the prophets. And then Jesus stops and he says to his disciples, but who do you say that I am? You know me. You follow me. Who do you think that I am? And I don't know how long the silence may have lasted after Jesus asked that question, but suddenly good old Peter, good old Simon Peter, he raises his hand and he bursts out his answer, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. For the first time, a human being has acknowledged, declared who Jesus is, and it is a great bravo moment, wonderful for you, Peter. You got the insight no one else has. But then Jesus does something very strange. He tells Peter and he tells the rest of the disciples what's going to happen to him. He says, we're going to go to Jerusalem, and when I get to Jerusalem, I will be betrayed, I will be arrested, I will be killed, and on the third day, I will be raised from the dead. And when Jesus says that, Peter is aghast. He takes Jesus, I've always imagined him grabbing Jesus, hauling him to the side of the road, and the gospel says he rebukes Jesus. He yells at him, he says, God forbid it, this will never happen to you. And how does Jesus respond to Peter, who has just declared him God's son? He calls him Satan. He says, get behind me, Satan. You're not thinking about godly things. You're thinking about human things. And I would imagine as Jesus is yelling at Peter, the rest of the disciples are standing back going, boy, I'm glad I didn't say anything here. Just keep my mouth shut. And that's how the scene ends. And it seems like we are right back where we started at the very beginning, asking the question, who is this guy? Well, God's about to give us a sneak peek. Because 6 days after this confrontation between Jesus and Peter on the road to Caesarea Philippi, God gives us a little glimpse of who Jesus really is. Jesus takes three of his disciples, his three favorite disciples, Peter, James, and John. He takes them up on a mountain at night. And we are told on this mountain, Jesus is transfigured. And the word for transfigured in Greek is a word we all know. It's the word metamorphosis. It's what happens to a caterpillar when it spins a cocoon and turns into a beautiful butterfly. Jesus is changed in a wonderful way in front of his disciples. The disciples see him standing, talking with Elijah and Moses. Now, I have no idea how they knew it was Elijah and Moses. I would suspect they did not have name tags on. But Elijah and Moses, the two greatest prophets of the Old Testament. And as they watch them talking together, Peter, good old wonderful Peter, Peter says, Jesus, good thing we're here. Let me build three tents, one for you to stay in, one for Elijah to stay in, and one for Moses to stay in, remembering the Ark of the tabernacle that the people of Israel had in the wilderness. But as Peter is saying this, suddenly a voice comes from a bright cloud in heaven that says, this is my son, the beloved. With him I am pleased. Listen to him. And at that moment, the disciples do what anyone does when they hear the voice of God. They fall to the ground filled with fear. And then, poof, it's all over. It's all over. And everything's gone. And the disciples are back on the mountaintop, and it's quiet. And there's Jesus, not shining, bright, glowing Jesus, just ordinary Jesus. And as they walk down the mountain, Jesus says to his disciples, shh, don't tell anybody what went on. And I would imagine those disciples are coming down the mountain, looking at each other, their jaws hitting the ground, going, what just happened? Who is this guy? Who is this guy, Jesus? Now, let's take a second here. Let's take a second and say, what would you do if you were on the mountain, huh? If you were on the mountain with Jesus that night, how would you have acted? How would you have responded? And it is really typical for us to think, we who have 1900 years of hindsight, to think, oh, I would have known. I would have handled it much better than those disciples. I knew what was going on. I would have had it all figured out. Well, you know what, folks? I doubt it. I doubt it very much. Because how did the guys who were actually there respond? Well, it's an interesting how they responded. Because we don't hear about James and John until a couple of chapters later. And here's the next story about James and John, just days after they have witnessed this amazing experience on the mountaintop. It's a story just before Jesus dies. It's a story in the other Gospels. James and John come to Jesus themselves. I love Matthew's version because in Matthew's version, they send Mom. And Mom goes to Jesus with a request. And her request of Jesus is, I want you to declare that these two sons of mine will sit, one at your right hand and one at your left hand when you come into your glory. So how did James and John react to this amazing transfiguration of Jesus? Well, for them, it was all about them. They weren't thinking about who Jesus was necessarily. They were thinking about, what's Jesus going to do for me? If he's such a powerful, almighty Son of God, boy, the payoff for me is going to be pretty cool. And instead of thinking about Jesus, they only think about themselves. And when the other disciples hear what James and John and their mom have done, they come to Jesus and this big uproar starts because the disciples are furious that James and John would dare to ask Jesus for positions of authority. They're probably also upset because they wanted to ask for the same thing themselves. And what happens? Well, if you're ready for it, we finally get a glimpse of who Jesus is. So who is this guy? Well, you know what? Jesus is about to tell us who he is. Because he says to his disciples as they're arguing over who's the greatest, he says this. He says, for even the Son of Man, even I did not come to be served, but I came to serve and to give my life to redeem many. That one who was lit up by heavenly light, the one who had all the glory of God shine upon him, the one who spoke with Elijah and Moses, the one God calls my son, who is he? Well, Jesus is about to tell us and show us. He will show his disciples by, on the last night of his life, bowing down and washing their feet. The Son of God becomes the servant of all. He will show the world a few days later when he dies on the cross and gives his life for the salvation of the world. In fact, there's a beautiful early Christian song in Paul's letter to the Philippians that talks about what Jesus has done, that says that even though he was in the form of God, he did not count that to be something to be grasped, but he emptied himself. He took the form of a servant, and he became obedient unto death, even death on a cross. Who is this guy? Well, friends, we can spend our entire lives pondering the question of who Jesus is. And you know what? I think it is worth our while to spend our entire lives pondering the question of who Jesus is. This week, we start Lent. This week, we enter again into that 40-day period, that time when you and I are called to think about who Jesus is and what he has done for us. And I'm going to finish my message today by giving you some suggestions, some encouragement of things we can all do during these 40 days. And we don't have to just do them for the 40 days. It's nice things to do our entire lives, to truly ponder the question of who this guy is. The first thing I think we need to do is remember, he asks every one of us, who do you say that I am? And the way we can wrestle with that is take the time to think about Jesus, to ponder Jesus, and to be filled with wonder about Jesus. We need to take the time. I'm currently teaching our 8th grade confirmation students the Lord's Prayer. And as we go through the petitions of the Lord's Prayer each week, I want the students not just to talk about prayer, but to actually pray. And so each week, the kids get a little slip of paper that has a prayer for that week that I'm asking them to pray, and it's based upon the part of the Lord's Prayer we've studied that week. And I said, I want you to take this home, and I want you to pray this prayer every day. So we came back the second week, and I say, how'd you do? Well, one girl made it 5 out of 7 days, and some made it 3, and a bunch of them, well, I remembered once or twice. And I said, you know what? We need to make prayer a ritual. What can we do to make this better? And so we came up with all kinds of good ideas. One boy said, you know what, his mom made copies of the prayer and taped them everywhere around the house. And he still remembered to do it twice, okay? One girl said, well, my mom put it on the mirror. One girl took a photo of the prayer with her phone. Some said, we say it as a family. We find a place, I put it on my computer. How can we learn the habit? And I want you to know this last week, they did a really good job of it. So you eighth graders who are here today, keep up the good work, right? But we need to take the time to think about Jesus, to talk to Jesus, to pray to Jesus, and ponder who he is. Jesus is worth the time in our busy lives to do these things. Jesus is worth the time during this Lenten season to open the scriptures and to read these amazing stories of people asking the questions about Jesus. Who is this guy? And I encourage you during Lent, some of you I know you read the Bible faithfully. If you haven't pulled your Bible out for a while, pull it out every day. Pick a story in the Gospels and read about who Jesus is. I encourage all of us during Lent to do what Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, to let our light so shine before others that they see our good works and give glory to our Father who is in heaven. Take the time this Lent to share the love of Jesus Christ with someone else. Because you know what? You all know people who are pondering who Jesus is as well. And you all know people who have never taken a moment to think about who Jesus is. You might be the one who can share the light of Jesus with them. I encourage us all during this time of Lent to take time to say thank you to Jesus each and every day, to thank him for who he is, to thank him for what he has done for us, to thank him for becoming that obedient servant who gave himself even to death on a cross. And I encourage each one of us during this time of Lent to take time each day to honor Jesus, to honor him by the way we live, to honor him by the way we treat others, to honor him by the devotion we give to him. Who do you say that I am? It's a question Jesus asks to each one of us. And by the way we live, by the way we act, by the way we treat others, that's how we answer his question. So may we take the time this Lent to truly focus on who is Jesus.